All right, did you figure that out? Did you resolve it? If your house caught fire, what would you grab on your way out? And so whatever that thing was that you just admitted to being the thing you would grab, what makes that thing more valuable than anything else that you have? What makes that the most valuable thing to you, that that's what you would grab on your way out? Well, what are the most valuable things you have? The last few weeks, we've been talking about how life is full of crossroads, these moments where you and I have to make a choice. And one of those crossroads happens when the pursuit of wealth diverges from relationships. And in life, it's not always wealth or relationships, but there are times when you and I will have to cheat one for the sake of the other. And when we come to a crossroads of wealth and relationships, you and I need wisdom to choose the better road. And here's what God says about what's better. You can find it in your bulletin, you can follow along on the screen, or you can follow in our app and take notes there as well. Here's what God says. When you come to a crossroads between pursuing wealth and comfort and a standard of living and relationships, here's what the wisdom that God's word gives us about what to choose in those moments. Proverbs 15, verse 16 through 17 says, "Better a little with the fear of the Lord." Fear of the Lord means the awe, the reverence, the respect for the Lord. Not, oh no, he's going to hurt me, right? It's revering him, respecting him. "Better a little with the fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. Better a small serving of vegetables with love than a fattened calf with hatred." And then Proverbs 16:8 says, "Better is a little with righteousness than great revenues with injustice." Here's the deal. Relationships are always better. They're always the better choice. The most valuable things that we have are our relationships. So if you have kids and you didn't say your kids, you're a horrible person. Relationships are the most valuable things you have. Now, the bank doesn't see it that way, right? I can't get a mortgage for my house based on how much I love my wife, right? Or based on how many good friends I have. They don't give mortgages because we live in a world, we live in a culture, we live with the current, the fabric of our world values stuff. It values hard assets and wealth more than it values relationships. Bloomberg, the news agency, did a survey of affluent people and ask them, okay, when you're choosing a spouse, what's most important to you? And for 56% of the people who answered this, they said that financial stability and wealth is more important than love. They look for that more than they look for love and affection in relationships. This is the kind of world that we're becoming. But God knows better. He knows us better. He knows that doesn't work for us. And he tells us here very plainly, relationships are always better. Relationships are better than wealth. They're better than a higher standard of living. They're better than having 8 different revenue streams, having passive revenue coming in, right? All that stuff. Relationships are better. And these 3 verses, 3 simple things, are a roadmap for you and I. They point toward 3 relationships that are always more valuable than anything else. They point toward how to live life. And these 3 relationships are, 1, your relationship with God, 2, your relationship with your family and others, and 3, your own inner relationship with self. And when you value those relationships, you discover a wealth you could not find in a bank or in a stock market or in a casino or any place like that. Those who are wise recognize that wealth is found in relationships. Relationships are always better. So I want to show you someone today who followed this map of relationships. Someone who consistently valued relationships over anything else. Someone who actually had a real choice because they had a life of luxury. They had a life of wealth. They had everything they could ever want, and yet they chose relationships over all that stuff. When it came to it, and that wealth and that comfort of living diverged this way, but relationships went that way, he went with relationships because he valued them more. His name was Moses. Have you heard of him? How many of you have heard of Moses? Moses was, when he was a baby, he was supposed to be killed because he was a Jewish baby living in Egypt. And the Pharaoh had ordered that all the Jewish baby boys be killed because they didn't want more Jewish men wandering around. But God arranged for him to be rescued and adopted by the very family of the Pharaoh who tried to have him killed. And so he is adopted by one of Pharaoh's daughters and raised up in Pharaoh's palace, raised up as a prince of Egypt. You've seen the cartoon, I'm sure. He grows up educated and rich and well-fed, the best food. He has servants at his beck and call. Everything he could want, he has. But as he grows older and he sees what's happening around him, he realizes that this road to the wealth and the standard of living he has is gone this way, but the relationships have gone the other way, and he finds himself at a point where he has to make a choice. So one day he sees an Egyptian beating a Jewish slave, and he intervenes and ends up killing the Egyptian. So he runs off to the desert. He flees Egypt, goes to the desert to escape whatever the punishment might be for what he did. But years later, God brings him back, and God chooses him to rescue his people from Egypt, to rescue his family and all of his people from Egypt. And so Moses has this amazing life. Sure, he runs away into the desert, but in that desert, God appears to him and speaks to him in a burning bush. And God sends him back, and God uses him to send these 10 plagues on Egypt to communicate to Pharaoh, hey, you're going to let my people go because I'm God and you're not, right? He uses Moses to part the Red Sea. I mean, come on, when's the last time you were driving around Boston? You're like, you know what? If I could just part the Charles, that would cut down on my traffic time so good, right? So Moses parts the Red Sea. That's the kind of person he becomes. That's the kind of life he lives. God uses Moses to lead his people out of slavery and to the promised land. God appeared to Moses. Moses saw God's glory. You and I, we gather together, we have these moments, we worship God and we sing and we pray here and on our own. And sometimes you have those moments that feel like epiphanies where you feel like you're sensing God. Moses saw God. God allowed him to see the trail of his glory as he went by. Moses saw God. And then God used Moses to bring his law and his order and his covenant to Israel, to form a promise and a pact between them that God would be their God and they would be his people. Man, God used Moses to get water out of rocks. God used Moses to have food fall from heaven. God used Moses so that the birds would fly low enough that people could just grab them when they're hungry and eat. Amazing things happened through Moses' life, because he chose relationships over wealth and everything else. When the path diverged, he didn't choose to cheat relationships. He cheated the stuff that was less valuable. And so most of what we know, a lot of what we know about God, has come down to us from Moses. That's how important he is. And the reason he's that important, the reason is because when Moses came to these crossroads and had to choose what was better, relationship with God or being considered the son of the Pharaoh who owns everything as far as the eye can see, or relationship with God's people or enjoying the luxury of living in the palace and eating the best food with people who hated his people, or choosing between a relationship with himself where he lived with integrity but had to ignore the injustice happening to his people. At each of those places, Moses chose relationship over everything else. It says in Hebrews chapter 11, which is just this amazing chapter of the Bible. Go back and read it later today. It just kind of tells the story of what faith is and of people, both people who have names who we know and people who are nameless who will never know their names, who lived by faith and amazing things happened in their lives. And they sacrificed because they valued their relationship with God, their relationship with God's people, and their own relationship with themselves, their integrity over having a safe, comfortable, easy, wealthy life. So Hebrews 11 summarizes Moses' life. Verse 24, it says, by faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt because he was looking ahead to his reward. So these three relationships, the first one, relationship with God. Moses, by faith, chose not to be Pharaoh's son, but to be a son of God, someone who follows God. And not only did Moses choose to reject Pharaoh and all of his wealth, there's a point as Moses is leading the people, the Israelites, out of Egypt toward the promised land. And you've been around church, you know the story about the times they fail. They make a golden cow to bow down to. Things like that happen. And there's a point where God says to Moses, look, all right, here's the deal. You take them, you lead them to the promised land, but I'm out. I cannot spend another day with these people or I'm going to kill them. Right? So Moses, go ahead, go to the promised land, but I'm not going with you. And Moses says, uh-uh. He says, no way, God. I will not take another step. I would rather live here in this barren wilderness with your presence than go to the promised land without you and not have your presence. You know, that promised land is the land that belonged to his family, to his people, that they had lost and had been ripped from them during the famine. It was the key to their survival. It was the key to everything. They would have security and food and comfort. It was the key to their people flourishing, to his family and everyone flourishing. This is everyone's dream. This was going to be their forever home. All they would ever need was there. And that's what we all want. Give me that forever home where I'll have what I need for my family. And Moses looks at God and says, look, God, if you're not there with me, if you're telling me that I can go there and have that, but I'm not going to have a relationship with you, you're not going to be there, then I don't want it. All I want is relationship with you. I don't care where I have to live. That's what I want more than anything else. Because Moses valued his relationship with God over everything. And he really believed that if he had to choose between everything he could ever hope for in this world and having God, God was better. Relationship with God was better. Better to survive in the wilderness with God than thrive in the palace without him. You know, when that road in front of you splits, and going with God means the wilderness, and the other road leads to a palace, what are you choosing? What are you going to choose? Because right there is where you'll discover whether you actually had a relationship with God or were using God to get a promised land and what you wanted all along was the palace, not God. Right there, those moments expose what it is we want and what it is we really value. Do we value relationship with God or do we just want God so that we can get the stuff that we really want? So that we can have the life we really want of comfort and wealth and a standard of living that matches or maybe is just a little better than the people around us. When that road diverges from the road to wealth and the road to God, when they split and you choose the road to wealth, what happens is this, you land in turmoil. That's what that verse says, verse 16. Better a little with the relationship with the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. And turmoil is an interesting word. It's often used when they're talking about war and armies in battle and when an army's plan would fall apart and everything would get confused and there's no way to communicate, the battlefield would turn chaotic and it would become a bloodbath of everyone just swinging their sword or spear wherever at everything. It would be turmoil. There's actually a scene in the Bible when the enemies of God's people, the Philistines, are camped out ready to wipe out the Israelites and God sends turmoil into their camp and they all wake up and they start killing each other. All the Philistines start fighting each other because they're in turmoil. And what God is trying to let you and I know is that when we choose wealth over relationship with God, whenever that road parts and we have to give up relationship with God in order to get wealth, or we cheat our relationship with God in order to get a little bit more of the wealth, what happens is we're actually attacking ourselves. We're throwing our life into turmoil. We're losing our sense of focus and purpose. We're abandoning the plan for our life, and we're ending up hurting ourselves. That's why it's so dangerous to choose the things that are less valuable, to choose the wealth over the relationship with God,
because it leads you to turmoil. Moses became great because he valued relationship with God over being Pharaoh's son and all the riches he had, and even over the promised land. Moses wanted relationship with God first. That's why he became great. Second thing, relationship with family or others. That verse 17 in the proverb, better is a small serving of vegetables with love than a fattened calf with hatred. That's about, you know, sitting around your table at home and eating. And granted, you know, in Solomon's day, vegetarians weren't around. They didn't have many vegetarians, not too many of them. And they valued choice meat. Meat meant opulence. It meant you were strong. And those, the people who ate vegetables, those were the poor people who were scrounging, right? They were just getting whatever they could. A sign of wealth or an extravagant meal was one where you killed the big ox outside and you had beef. And that was the ultimate sign of opulence. Food was a sign of opulence, of wealth. And it still is today. If you go around the world, there's some crazy, I've looked up some just crazy expensive dishes. If you go to Fujimaki in Tokyo, you can get a bowl of ramen for $110 for a bowl of noodles. How much is a thing of ramen in a vending machine? $1.50? $110. The Capital Dog in Sacramento, California has the Ultra Dog. It's the world's most expensive hot dog. $145.99 for a hot dog. Who knows what's in that hot dog? In Scotland, you can get a bottle of what they call end of history beer. It's Belgian ale packaged inside of a taxidermied squirrel's carcass and costs about $1,000 for a bottle. In Britain's Wagyu meat pie, a meat pie costs $2,000 a slice, $16,000 for a pie of meat. And then in Italy, Chef Viola, this one I understand. He has a Louis XIII pizza loaded with all kinds of stuff. It's pizza, so I get it. $12,000 for a pizza. Worth it. Worth it. I'll sell my car and eat the pizza. But what's the point of having a great meal if you hate everyone that you're eating with? And everyone you're eating with hates you. There's bitterness at that table, right? Wouldn't it be better to have kale, with people you love, where you sit together and you laugh and you have relationship? Isn't that so much better? And Moses understood this. Moses, Hebrews tells us, he chose to be mistreated along with the people of God. That's kale. Kale is being mistreated, right? Along with the people of God, rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. You know, that Moses' situation was far worse than just salad over steak. Right? Moses had a choice to make. He could stay comfortable living in a palace, a life of luxury, all the best food, anything he could want, whenever he wanted it. You could have dessert any time of day, right? He could add all that stuff. And he could have that living in the palace with people who hated his people. Or he could go out and join his family and fight to just survive, to just have enough to eat for the day. And Moses chose his family over having that life of luxury. He chose to leave that opulent life just to get a chance to get back home with his family. Because Moses was wise. And Moses understood that when the road diverges between family, between relationships with others, and some higher standard of living, a little bit better food, a little bit better house, a little bit better car. If you choose the standard of living, right? If you go after that in your home, if you go after just having better things instead of having better relationships, what happens in your home is resentments build up and anger builds up. And what you find is, sure, we've got a nicer house, nicer things, but do we have love? Do we have relationship? Do we know each other anymore? Or are we just all on our nice expensive devices doing our thing? Has our stuff just simply crept in and divided all of us? And wouldn't it be better to just burn it all down, all of it, in order to have relationship with one another? Real relationship, where you know what's happening in your children's lives, where you know what's happening in your spouse's life. Wouldn't it be better to give up all that stuff if it meant you'd have better relationships, stronger relationships? Because relationships are what last, and they matter. more than anything else. You know, things are easier, it's true. You know, you park your car, it stays where you put it. You ask your kid to sit down and stay somewhere, they're not staying there, right? Things do what you tell them. You can turn them off and you can turn them on, right? They don't talk back or have their own opinions, but they can never give you love. They can never give you love the way family, the way others can. They can never hug you. They can never cheer you up when you're depressed. They can never laugh at your dumb jokes or smile at you knowingly because they know you, because you've spent time together. Things don't do that. So, are you investing in things? Like they're the more valuable, or family and relationships? Moses became great because he valued his relationship with family more than the comforts of the good life. And then lastly, the third relationship is that relationship with yourself. Proverbs 16:8 says, "Better is a little with righteousness than great revenues with injustice." You know, I started to look up the crazy things people do for money. I don't recommend doing that. I lost a little bit more of my hope for humanity reading websites about the things people will do. Not, you know, I'm not talking about murderers or drug dealers or people selling their bodies in prostitution level stuff. I'm talking about normal people, what we would call normal everyday people like you and I, who, you know, guys challenge each other and for $50 a guy will pick something disgusting up off the street and eat it, or lick the school bus floor, or lick the bathroom floor for $50. That kind of stuff that people will do. Sell their foreheads as advertising space and get tattoos, right? Just to make some money. Who will sell naked pictures of themselves online just so to make some money. They're never going to see the people who buy them, right? But it gives them some money and they feel like that's okay. Clean people's houses naked for money. Trade their underwear for groceries. I'm not making any of this stuff up. I've seen people auctioning their virginity off online. And some people know and they're ashamed of what they've done to make a buck, right? They're ashamed of what they've done. But what I found most disturbing is how many people, you'd see these memes, you'd see these posts popped up and Reddit, whatever, and people saying, "This is what I did, and I'm proud of it, man. I barely had to work for like 2 minutes. I did this, and I got $100, or I got $1,000, and it's totally worth it, and I would do it again because I got money, because I got money, because I got money." They've decided that revenue is the most valuable thing. But Moses wasn't willing to sacrifice his integrity in order to keep a stream of prophets coming in. Look at what it says again in Hebrews verse 26 now. "He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as having greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward." I remember my brother once, one of my older brothers, who's a pastor now. I remember sitting in the kitchen, and he was there with all of his friends, and they pretty much just grabbed everything out of the fridge and out of the cabinets, and they made a stack of just everything they could find between two saltine crackers. As a kid, for me, I remember being like this high, and they each paid my brother a nickel to eat it. And right there and then I learned how desperate we are just to get a nickel, that we would eat like all this just junk and saltines. Who wants to eat saltines for a nickel? We chase after money. We think money is more valuable. Moses, he looks and says, "You know what? I'm getting this stream of revenue coming in. But what am I giving up for it? I'm not directly involved in the slavery. I'm not directly involved in people being oppressed or hurt." But Moses sees it, and he's getting richer and richer. As the kingdom of Egypt expands, Moses, he's got this revenue coming in for himself. But where is it coming from? It's coming from his own people in slavery. His own people being used up like toilet paper, a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time, being piece by piece torn apart until they're completely unraveled. And Moses had a choice to make. He could keep his head down and say, "You know what? I'm not directly involved in that. I'm just doing my job as the prince. So I'm not really involved in that stuff. He could keep his head down and ignore the injustice around him in order to protect his revenue stream. Or he could recognize that that was having a cost on his integrity. That was having a cost on his own inner righteousness and his relationship with himself and decide, you know what? It's not worth it, the cost this has on my soul, because I know that this is what's happening. I know this is a result of injustice. And I'd rather be righteous and have what comes out of me be righteous than have all kinds of revenue streams coming in and know that they're not right, know that they're taking advantage of people, know that it's not really helping people, but even hurting people. So getting revenue doesn't always come on the back of injustice, but when it does, those who are wise recognize it and refuse it and choose instead to maintain their soul and that relationship with themselves, that integrity on the inside. They won't sell their soul. They won't justify that it's worth it because, look, now I got a new iPhone. Because, look, now I got this. Now I can afford that. Even if it's school books or tuition. You know what? It's not worth trading my righteousness, trading my soul in order to get that. Even though that's a good thing, the most important thing is not an education, not having an iPhone or whatever else. The most important thing is your relationship with yourself, that righteousness on the inside, and your relationship with others, your family, and your relationship with God. Moses became great because he valued his inner relationship, what came out of his life, over those revenue streams coming in. This is all why Moses became so great. And God could use him in such amazing ways. But obviously we're not Moses, and we're not living Moses' life in Moses' time. So how does this work out in your life? How will this look in your life? How will making the wise choice about wealth or relationships work out in your life? When those roads diverge, what's it going to look like? It happens in big choices, but over the course of our life, there are only a couple handfuls of big choices we make, right? You're going to choose, you know, a career. You're going to choose college or go to career instead of college. What college you're going to go to, those are big choices. They're life-shaping choices. You're going to choose where you're going to live, right? You're going to choose whether to buy a house. That's a big choice. You're going to choose who to marry. You're going to make all kinds of big choices, but there's only a couple handfuls of those. And in those big choices, when you're in that place, the thing to ask is, what is better? They don't always diverge from relationship with God. The career you choose doesn't mean you're diverging from relationship with God, but you've got to ask yourself, if this is the career I choose, will this career, and in what ways might this career diverge so that I value it and the money it brings me and the prestige it brings me or whatever else it brings me, what might happen where it starts, I value it more than I value my relationship with God, my relationship with others and my family, my relationship with self. You know, where might that come up? And let me think about it now and decide, is this where I want to go? Is this where I want to be? And if this is where I go, how will I avoid that sucking that pulls me over so I start valuing a standard of living, valuing wealth, valuing income streams over God and family and internal integrity? Where might it come up? Think about that ahead of time and decide what's better. What's going to be better in life? What are you going to value highest overall, and how will you do it? Are you willing to not take a promotion? Are you willing to have a smaller house in a not as great neighborhood? What are you willing to do in order to continue to value what's most valuable? But those big choices are the big choices, right? And those are the moments we usually sit down and think carefully. But what about the small choices? Every day, you and I make hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of choices. And they deserve our attention too. Because every day we're coming to crossroad moments. Crossroad moments where wealth or seeking wealth or seeking a standard of living is going this way and relationships are going that way and you and I have to choose. You know what? How much stuff are we going to get involved with as a family? How many activities are we going to put the kids in? Right? Activities are great, they're wonderful and good, but what if they're happening at the cost of your relationship with each other because you're all so busy with your activities and it's fun and it's a great way of living. Look how everyone's living this way, going to all these activities. It's great. I don't have to really deal with the kids most of the day. This is wonderful. They're in activities. What's the cost of relationship if you overextend into all that stuff? What time are you going to go to work tomorrow morning? What time are you going to come home? And in that decision, and it is a decision, you may feel like, well, you know, I don't have any choice in the matter. But no, it's how are you going to work? How much time are you going to put in? And what cost is there? Right? Where does that maybe diverge from a relationship with God, relationship with family? If you're working 60, 70, 80 hours a week, where's your time for family? Where's your time for God? And serving him. How is that working out? Where do you find time for any relationship with anything other than I've got to work, I've got to work, I've got to work. Now I'm just so tired, all I want to do is watch TV, watch TV, watch TV. What cycle are you in? What are you valuing? Should you take that second job? Can you continue to work in the place you're working, knowing the things you know about how people are treated, about injustice that goes on there, or about the product you're selling, or anything like that? Can you continue to work in that environment? Or maybe you should continue to work in that environment, but maybe there's things you need to start to do to speak out against injustice that you know is happening there. People being mistreated, workers being mistreated, clients being mistreated, right? Are you in a place right now where you're sacrificing and cheating against your own inner relationship, righteousness, integrity? Because that's your job and you gotta have your job. And so you're not saying anything about the injustices you know are happening. Are you confusing giving your family a higher standard of living and more stuff with real relationships? You know, in life, it's not always, like I said, it's not always wealth or relationships. But there are times when you're going to have to cheat one for the other. Cheat the things that are less important. Wealth is less important. Standard of living is less important. They don't last forever. If you've got to cheat something, cheat stuff. Cheat getting more money. Cheat having better things. Cheat the higher standard of living. Don't cheat your relationship with God. Spending time reading his word and knowing him, praying, talking to him, worshiping him. Don't cheat that in your life. Desire him more than the promised land and the palace. Don't cheat your family. Don't cheat your own inner integrity and righteousness, because relationships are far better than anything you might cheat them for. Now, maybe you're sitting here and you've blown this. Maybe you've blown it badly. Or maybe you've blown it just a little bit. The truth is, we've all blown this, right? Haven't we? At different points. And we continue to blow it every day. We continue to make this mistake all the time where we come to these crossroads and we don't value relationships the way we should. We don't recognize how valuable they are, that they're better. And that's why we need Jesus. That's why we need Jesus, because we need Jesus to change us. We need Jesus to teach us how to live and give us the power and strength to live that way, to transform us deep down so we don't keep choosing the wrong road, but now have some strength to choose the right road. And that's why Jesus came. That's what Jesus did. Think about how Jesus fixes this for us, because you and I can't fix this. Just knowing this, me telling you this, reading to you these Proverbs, saying, look, this is what God's word says, relationships are better. Knowing it doesn't fix it. I need help to fix it. Jesus came to fix it, to change it, to heal it, to transform it. So Jesus, do you remember when Jesus was tempted? He goes out to fast for 40 days, and the devil comes to him and tempts him and says, hey, you got to be hungry, right? Why don't you make yourself some food? A loaf of bread would probably be, you know, just amazing right now, wouldn't it? You haven't eaten for 40 days.
Why not just make yourself some food? I know, Jesus, I know you've come to have relationship with people again and restore all that and restore relationship with God the Father. I understand all that, but aren't you hungry? And he takes Jesus and shows him all the riches and wealth of the world and says, Jesus, I know you've come to, you know, honor your relationship with God the Father, and you've come to restore the relationship with all these people, but look, I could give you the world. I could give you all of it. What more could you want? Look at all of this. It could be yours. I can put it in your hands. It says, Jesus takes him again to the top of the temple and says, I know you're special. You know you're special. Why don't we do something with that specialness, right? Why cover that up? So why don't you just throw yourself from the top of the temple and show everyone how special you are? What good is it being special if you can't take advantage of it every once in a while? And at every turn, Jesus valued his relationship with the Father and his relationship with us and his own internal righteousness and integrity over everything else that was thrown at him in that moment. That's why Jesus can save us. Because unlike Moses, Jesus didn't fail. Moses had spectacular failures. Times when he didn't obey God and do what God said because he blew it like you and I did. Moses wasn't perfect, but what Moses was doing is he was pointing us to Jesus. He was pointing us to Jesus saying, here's what it's supposed to be like. Here, I'm trying to choose relationships, but he's pointing us, look, there's the one. Jesus is the one. And everything Moses did just points to Jesus. And then you come to Jesus and you see him and you say, oh, I get it. Choose the relationship with God. Choose the relationship with others, with people, even when it costs you your life, because that's what Jesus did. He died, but he rose again so that you and I could have a relationship. Jesus was willing to pay the highest cost so you and I could have a relationship to heal us, to restore us, because you and I blow it all the time. Moses blew it. You blow it. At the end of Moses' life, he's not going to get to go into the promised land. He's not going to make it all the way there, but they're close. And what God does for Moses is he gives him exactly what he wanted. Because Moses said, I don't want the promised land without you, God. I really only want you. I want your presence. So God takes him up onto a mountain and shows him the promised land. So he gets to see it. See, here's what they're all going to get. Here's what you've been working so hard for. See it. He's not teasing Moses. Some people think he's teasing him. Like, there it is, Moses, but you didn't do everything I told you. You failed, so you're not going to get it. Just wanted you to see what you're not going to get. That's not what God's doing. God takes him up and shows him there's the promised land that you've been working so hard to bring them to. You're not going to go there. I'm going to give you what you want. I'm going to take you to be with me. I'm going to take you to be with me. I'm going to let you enter the best rest, the ultimate promise that you'll step into my presence. That's what God did for Moses. Not because he lived a perfect life. He messed up just the way you and I did, but because along the way he valued relationship. And that verse from Hebrews tells us he chose to suffer being mocked and abused and looked down on for the sake of Christ. For the sake of Christ, even thousands of years before Jesus came, Moses recognized that he really was leaning on what Jesus would do. God's grace, all along, it's been God's grace and faith in God's grace. Moses knew he wasn't the one. He was pointing toward the one. It was Jesus who was going to make it possible for us to enter into this ultimate promise that God has for us. And Moses said, that's what I want. I don't want any of this other stuff. It's not nearly as valuable. I want relationship with you, God. Worship team, would you come back? So this morning, I want to encourage you, challenge you, exhort you. You know, when it comes to following Jesus and being a Christian, many times we think it's about things we have to believe, doctrines we have to subscribe to, a list we have to check off, behaviors we have to perform. And it gets very confused and sometimes very theoretical or philosophic in our minds, but really, when I say to you this morning, choose relationship, what I'm saying to you is choose Jesus. Not a set of ideas or beliefs or philosophies. Jesus, the person,
fully God, fully man, who came and gave his life for you and for me. Choose Jesus. So much easier to wrap our minds around that. Choose that relationship with Jesus. Go and read in your Bible, read what he did and what he said and who he is, and choose, I want a relationship with him. I want to know him. I want to become like him. Choose Jesus. Let that be your focus. Choose that relationship with him. And when you and I do that, value that relationship first over everything else, and then follow it by valuing the family relationship and others and valuing that relationship with self. When we choose the relationship with Jesus, we will never, I promise you this, you will never be the same. He'll transform you. You'll never be the same. Would you stand and let's worship him?